Who would I like to see as president? Why, myself, of course. And who am I? Well, I'm Joan Jett Black, Queer Nation's candidate for president in 1992. That's right, we're gonna put a drag queen in the White House.
Okay, picture this. It is smack dab in the middle of the AIDS crisis. Homophobia is abound. And the only news stories you ever see about queer people are profoundly negative. Then Joan Jett Black enters the picture, first by running for mayor in Chicago, and then eventually by running for president. This was the 1992 election with Clinton and Bush, and Joan's candidacy running as a drag queen created a spectacle, which was the point entirely. Joan was a part of Queer Nation. This was an early activist group known for their edgy, often confrontational tactics. I mean, just look at their name, right? The word queer in the 90s, it was just a tiny infant on its way to being reclaimed by the community. Joan Jett Black's candidacy forced queer issues into the limelight in this beautifully absurd way.
I haven't been listening to the television, but hopefully Queer Nation's name is out there. And people are going, who the fuck is that? We could have queer people running for president, queer people running for governor, and queer people running for the Supreme Court.
Joan Jett Black, aka Terrence Allen Smith, is here to talk about her historic run, as well as everything that led up to that moment. And I should say, too, that her story is made into a play by Terrell Alvin McCraney. Terrell is famous, of course, for writing and winning an Oscar for the movie Moonlight. And the play was called Ms. Black for President, and it premiered a few years ago at the Steppenwolf in Chicago. All right, without further ado, I'm Jeffrey Masters, and this is LGBT Q&A with Joan Jett Black, a.k.a. Terrence Allen Smith. All right, so take me back to the beginning. I know that before you ran for president, you also ran for mayor in Chicago. What made you want to start running for office? Talk to me about deciding to do that.
Well, we had formed a Queer Nation in Chicago, and I was one of the five people to do it, you know, but we really stuck our face in everywhere we could. And then I wasn't at this meeting, and somebody suggested, you know, there was a mayoral race coming up, and someone suggested, you know, somebody from Queer Nation should run for mayor. And they decided to pick me because I had already been doing theater as Joan Jett Black in and around Chicago. And the next time I came to the meeting, they said, oh, would you run for mayor? And at first I was like, no, hell no. You know, I was a big pothead then still. And I thought, well, that'll be bad, you know. But then I found out about Jose Saria, and I went back and did some reading, and I'm like, oh yeah, oh, I'll do that. That's definitely what I'll do.
Right. Jose was also a drag queen and is considered the first out gay person to run for office in the U.S. This was the early 1960s in San Francisco. But for you, though, was the idea for you to run for mayor as a black gay man, or was it always specifically as a drag queen?
As a drag queen.
Oh, it was?
As a drag queen. I took the character and she ran for mayor. But what we did is we went into City Hall and formally registered. And knowing Queer Nation, not only did we have cameras, we called every TV station, and they showed up. Because they're like, what do you mean? Drag queens going to run for mayor? Nobody was running against Rich Daley. So it was great. Then what we did is we tried to go everywhere we knew he was going to be. We would create a little bit of a disturbance everywhere because we didn't have any money. You know, we're not getting contributions. So that's how we did it, was publicity, which was Queer Nation's thing anyway, you know, create visibility.
They were known for being very, like, controversial, like, in a good
way.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
And, like, confrontational.
Yeah, because we had ACT UP at the same time, but ACT UP had to work on getting the medicine. So what we did is we created visibility any way we could. They had kiss-ins. It was a big thing that Queer Nation used to do back then. They would go into straight bars, and at some point, they would all start to kiss each other, which could get you killed back then. So if you see us more, you know, you can't beat us all up. You know, it kind of worked. And then obviously I didn't win. And then the presidential race came up right after that. You know, we know how to get the publicity. So I just announced my candidacy for president. And the only way to do it was to have it be a satire campaign. You either got the joke or you didn't. But most people did. I mean, they were like, oh, okay, I can see you running. Why not?
I mean, you described it as like satire and a joke, but you also like took it seriously.
Yeah.
You had campaign events.
Yeah.
You had a platform.
Yeah.
We think that every little boy wants to be president. It does not matter if he's wearing a dress. We have lots of plans. We're going to do lots of wonderful things once we get to Washington. One of the things we're going to do is give everything back to the Indians and let them take it from there. We had the New Deal president. We had the Great Society president. I believe George Bush actually calls himself the education president. I'm going to be the beauty president. We're going to have
With the platform, you're advocating for universal health care, funding education,
yeah.
Ending student loan debt, reproductive rights, defunding the police. I mean, these are all like extremely like mainstream positions today. Were they more fringe back then?
They were more fringe back then. I've been involved legalizing marijuana since the 70s. No one talked about that. I said I would take the education budget and the military budget and switch them. So that was fun because I was always ready for a question of, oh, you have to be. If you're running for office, you got to be ready for anything they ask you. And I had a lot of fun with that, you know.
I love the like duality of like you know being in drag,
yeah.
And there's inherent comedy in that, but also you're extremely smart and have like an up on the issues and able to speak about them all.
Yes, which flabbergasted people, but which got me more favor in the press. They were like, wow, you know, because their instinct is to make fun of it, but they couldn't really. If you answer a question, they're like, oh, wait a minute, this isn't what we thought. You know, and this was all before, I keep saying this, before the internet, long before the internet. You had to use every trick you had in the book if you wanted to stay in the press. It's only with me. The reason I started doing it in the first place was because so many of my friends had died from AIDS. So I had to do, I felt like this was still such a major issue that people didn't get it unless a gay person told them. This was really affecting us. We're fighting for our lives here. We're still suffering from some weird PTSD because you lost so many friends and you got used to death being a part of your life in the, you know, when you were 25 years old. So that affects a lot of things, but it made me get up and get involved.
So it was those two pillars. It was the visibility, but it was also to like force queer issues and talking about AIDS into the like mainstream conversation.
Yes.
How were like queer issues, but specifically like AIDS focused issues, like talked about back then, like in the media and like by politicians, if any?
We were still looked at as criminals. You know, well, you brought this on yourselves, you know, by the way, you have either that or they said, I love this part. They said it came from Africa. If it's really bad, it came from Africa. Because that's what they were saying about somebody fucked a monkey somewhere. And that was what people believed.
Yeah.
What my own parents believed.
How were the two candidates, Bush, H.W. Bush and Clinton, talking about gay people, if at all?
Well, Clinton was the only one that kind of mentioned it and said, we have to do something about this. But they were still looking at it. Gay marriage was not illegal. Gay issues were still considered back burner issue. So we helped bring that issue up. You know, the more you talked about it, the more it would come up.
I mean, like, just removing the drag component, the early 90s, to have, like, just an openly gay black man in the media, did that feel like a radical act?
Yeah, it did, because it wasn't happening. Sylvester had been on The Tonight Show with Joan Rivers.
Look at your jewelry. All right.
That's my wedding set.
That's your wedding set. All right. Who are you married to?
Not Rick.
Good. Now,
no.
Let me ask.
Oh, God. I'm sorry.
No.
No.
What?
Rick's parents are watching.
Well, surprise.
There's one or two people here and there, but it wasn't something that people knew about. It was still shocking. I mean, it's still shocking now to people, but it was really shocking then.
And this is the height of, like, the AIDS crisis.
Yes.
Like, and here with Joan Jett Black, we have, like, positive gay representation to, like, counteract all the death.
Yeah, that was not happening either. There's very little positive identification. But I came out in 1975. And even then, a lot of gay people were like, what would you want to run around telling people you're gay for? You know, because they had just been through a generation where they would go to bars and those bars were not, you didn't have signs over them. And they were still in danger of being arrested by the police, you know. So it was a whole different world even when I came out.
So how did you answer that question when they said, like, hey, like, dummy, why would you want to be out and, like, proud?
Because if they see us, then they'll realize that we're everywhere and they won't try to kill us all the time and they won't think we're crazy. In 1973, that was when they took homosexuality off of the American psych, whatever it is.
The DSM.
Yeah. So that was only 2 years after that. So most people still thought gay people were crazy.
And so you started doing drag pretty damn early, too.
Yeah, 75. I entered a Halloween contest, and I won this contest. So I was doing drag before I graduated from high school.
Wow.
18 was the legal age for adulthood in Michigan back then. They dropped it to 18, and then they raised it again to 21. So we could go into bars and everything. I have many stories of running into teachers in a bar. Oh, hi, Mr. Bass. And he's like, you know, because we could go, we were treated as adults. I moved out of my parents' house. I was an adult.
You moved in with the Gay Liberation Front.
Yes, I did. And that was good, you know. It was very good for me to be able to do that because it kept me abreast of the community as well as being drag queen.
How did you get connected with the GLF, the Gay Liberation Front?
I had seen gay magazines and I knew it was near my high school. So I just went and talked to them. And I had been doing, and this was independent of anything, I had been speaking in sociology classes in my own high school about being a gay teenager. So me and a girl named Michelle Crenshaw, and people were, you know, wow, that takes a lot of courage to be able to do that, you know. Teachers would ask us to do it because they, you know, if homosexuality came up, they didn't know any gay people really or couldn't get anybody to come and speak to the class. I didn't think of it as gutsy, but I thought, well, I'd always been kind of a charmer anyway. I wasn't the smartest kid, but even in Catholic school, I learned how to befriend the most powerful people in the room. The rest of you don't matter. Okay. If they like me, I'm
That's
okay.
Funny.
It worked. It worked in school even before I knew what I was doing.
Wow.
I had no trouble in Catholic school. None. In the 60s.
As an out gay teenager, that's actually shocking.
It doesn't seem shocking now, but it was kind of then, you know.
And so did you move to Chicago specifically for its, like, drag scene?
No, actually, I moved to Chicago because in Detroit, where I was from, and had been doing drag for 2 years, I convinced myself that I was going to have a sex change. That's what they called it back then. Because the first time anybody told me, as a geeky kid, the first time anybody told me I was attractive was when I was in drag. So I thought, well, that's what I'll do. I'll be a woman. That's not reason enough to do that. And I got kind of scared. I was taking estrogen pills. And my body was, you know, well, I'm sure I can say this by now, even on the radio. My nipples changed, and I was like, I don't want this. I don't want this. And so I decided not to do that. And so I moved to Chicago to kind of get to leave that behind me, what I thought. And I got it, you know, in Chicago. I ended up in drag anyway, you know. So I just, you know, whenever it came up, and I did mostly theater in Chicago. I didn't do the whole lip sync thing. So I was very lucky.
So your drag performance is mainly on stage and plays.
Yes.
And theaters.
Yes.
It's kind of funny that you, as a teenager, thought that you might be trans, you might be a woman.
Yeah.
And then you realize, actually, that's not who I am. But then you kind of grow up and started dressing like a woman anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't get away from it. But I've always believed that gay people are special because we understand more being male and female. The word I always used was androgyny. You know, we're androgyny.
Yeah. I mean, also, like, looking at your, like, Joan Jett Black's, like, look, like, you didn't hide your biceps.
No.
You weren't trying to be, like, overly feminine.
Yeah.
And that's, like, a very, what I consider to be, like a more modern expression of, like, gender, you know?
I would say, I'm not trying to be a woman. Obviously, I'm not a woman. But men make high heels. Men should wear them.
When you moved to Chicago, you were 18, I think you said?
No, I was 20.
20, okay. How like welcoming did you find the queer community there?
Well, it was all about the bars. It was really all about the bars. It was a bar scene. But it was extremely welcoming, even though there was segregation in that, and I didn't get it. I've always been kind of keep going, but we were more members of a tribe back then.
When you were going out in drag, like, could you, like, wear drag, like, on the bus home? Or was that, like, a definite no-no?
You could really get messed up if you were by yourself. And I was just never going to wear by myself. You know, I'm going to wear a dress. I'm going to make sure that somebody's with me. You know, that was my solution. And you still should do that because somebody still might come out of nowhere.
You know, there's always been, like, this, like, anti, like, femme bias in the gay community.
Oh, yeah.
Did dressing in drag, like, did it get you, like, laid less or more?
It got me laid a lot less. But, yeah, it got me laid a lot less, but I made a lot of friends. And gay people, you know, have always been weird about sex anyway. So, and also being black, oh, my God, don't get me started about how I still deal with that. I told some guy recently, if you say BBC one more time, to me the BBC stands for the British Broadcasting Corporation, not Big Black Cock. But, you know.
So that's something you're still, like, encountering even today in San Francisco?
Yes. People, unless you can get people to, you know, relax about race. I used to think that maybe I can help do something about that in my lifetime. But no, that's not going to change.
When you're talking about, like, the 90s, the AIDS crisis, during that time of AIDS, when did you, like, stop feeling like, okay, like, I'm not going to get this thing, the HIV?
Oh, well, because early on, in the early 80s, there was a program in Chicago called On Me, Not In Me. Because we figured out, oh, well, maybe it's something to do with anal sex because nobody was getting it who was having oral sex. You know, it's not transmitted that way.
Yeah.
And I've stuck with that since then. You know, nothing anal is all oral. But also, if you treat yourself as if you already have AIDS, you'll be more careful.
You're saying in terms of like safe sex.
Yes. That you same sex is the only sex I've had since then. And of course now there's PrEP and all these other things that you could take. That's not enough for me. I'm still gonna stick with, you know, what's worked. But I'm pretty sure that's how I've done it. And I'm a big bathhouse person. I love going to the bath. You know.
Yeah.
It was the bushes and the baths and the, you know, all that. And it really changed my whole attitude about sex and sex in general, you know.
Are you still doing drag?
No, I don't have to anymore. There are enough pictures and posters. That Joan Jett Black for President poster where I'm holding the rifle, that is in a permanent exhibition in Spain somewhere and at Oxford. I mean, people are, that poster got all the way around the world. And they still ask, at first they'll ask the same questions that they asked on the radio when I was doing all these radio interviews. Drag queens run for president in America. I'm like, well, they told us anybody could run for president. Anybody. So, okay, we'll make them stick to that word.
What do you think, like, the, like, legacy or, like, impact of running for president was?
That we could indeed do anything, you know. And lately, it's been lately that I realized that because I did that, there are people who would say, oh, well, then I can come out too. And I've had people that will stop me and mention that I came out because I read about you. It's a wonderful thing to have happen. It's very nice to realize, you know, that I did something that somehow became historical. I wasn't thinking about that. So it's just wonderful.
Double Terrence, thank you for spending so much time. This has been fantastic.
It has been wonderful. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And that is Joan Jett Black, a.k.a. Terrence Allen Smith. Now, if you enjoyed this episode and you want to support the work we do here, please consider joining our Substack. It is the best way that you can help us ensure that we can continue documenting stories like this. And there's a link to that in our show notes if you want to check that out. Also on our Substack, I should mention this week, you can check out some incredible photos and videos. Yes, there are videos from Joan Jett Black's run for office. So that's on our Substack. There is a link to that in our show notes. And thank you so much to everyone who's joined us there. We truly, literally could not produce this show without you. And then next week, we'll be joined by Sandy Stone. She is in her late 80s and one of the early pioneers, we can say, when it comes to trans studies. So that is next Tuesday. I will see, or rather hear, you there. All right. I'm Jeffrey Masters. I host and produce this podcast. Bye.
The first thing I'm going to do is change the police to the fashion police. I think we're going to end a lot of crime if we catch them on the street dressed wrong in the first place. And then who knows after that?